and then I will.
I will call this Monday, November 26, 2012, Planning Commission meeting to order. And if you could take a roll for us, please.
Okay. Chairman Lutz?
I'm here.
Commissioner Demarest?
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen?
Here.
Commissioner Christensen?
Here.
Commissioner Rodland?
Here.
Commissioner Sherwin?
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Here.
Thank you. This is the time of our meeting. We come to comments from citizens. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to address the Planning Commission tonight on any item that is not on tonight's agenda? Vicki, is there a microphone?
There's two mics up here, and I have a list. I've forgotten that.
Oh, this one's a good one.
So I don't have tonight's.
Oh, and if you could give us your name and address for the record, please.
It's on.
Yeah.
Is it okay?
Yeah.
Vicki Mullen, 10312 210th Street Southeast, Snohomish, Washington 98296. I don't have a copy of the agenda, but from what I can tell, you just have. We're speaking on signage tonight. Is there anything else that's on the agenda besides that?
Okay. Nothing else.
So. I do want an opportunity to speak on signage, but that will be later then, during the time you do the workshop part?
Yeah, that would be more appropriate.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then what I would like to bring up this time is there are a number of people on Facebook that are curious about the planning minutes, the Planning Commission minutes, and the both the audio and the written minutes. And they are requesting that they be brought up to date. And I know that they have spoken with Jean about it, but I noticed I told someone that I was coming here tonight, so I told them that I would ask about it, especially the audio, because they could see that perhaps the written minutes might be taking a bit longer, but the audio, they don't understand why the audio takes so long to get on. So those are just a comment for you.
Thank you.
You can just leave.
And Anique Bennett, if you could give us your name and address for the record. Anique. Thank you.
Okay. Anique Bennett, and I'm the director of the Monroe Chamber of Commerce, 108 East Main Street, number 206, Monroe 98272. And I'm just here on behalf of our member businesses to thank you for this effort of going through this review and helping our community and businesses poise themselves for growth and helping the community to come together and understand our signage. So I just wanted to give you an acknowledgement. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We have no minutes to approve at this time, nor do we have any public hearings. In our first workshop,
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Dave?
Maybe just, I know our planning manager was out of the room for the public comment, but Paul, just maybe if we can get some feedback from you with regard to the status of the Planning Commission's meetings, both written and audio. The question was raised in public comment as to why at least the audio perhaps hasn't gotten out there sooner. Recognizing that the written can take longer to produce, but the audio should probably be pretty easy to get up there. Do you have any feedback on that?
Be right up there.
Thank you.
Questions about audio and written minutes.
The comment that was offered was that members of the public can perhaps understand why there's a longer delay, or a delay perhaps on the written minutes, because the need to transcribe and produce versus posting of the audio recording should be fairly straightforward. And why is it perhaps done sooner than what it seems to be currently?
I don't have an answer to that, but I will check into that tomorrow and find out where this audio posting is at. It shouldn't take very long to get the audio up there. Actually, our goal is to get completely caught up with the written minutes by our next meeting in December. We are behind on that.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
With that, we are moving on to our workshop, which is the sign code update. And Mark, I believe you're giving us this presentation tonight, is that correct?
Indeed. Good evening. As I mentioned, my name is Mark Landkammer. I'm a planner here with the City of Monroe. And I'm just going to give you kind of a brief background. It's kind of done this before. We almost managed to do it last week, but or 2 weeks ago, but we had a long one that evening. So I just want to kind of start in the beginning and quickly go through a little chronology. We started looking at, thinking about, particularly in-house, the sign code probably almost a year and a half ago, and kind of creeping up on how to begin a process by which to update the current sign element. We've known all along that there are issues with it. Just about every time we get a sign application, which, by the way, is probably two or three times a week, we get a sign request. So we do see a fair amount of them, and even with a couple, two, three a week, you rapidly begin to see patterns that it's very hard to review signs under the current code because it has conflicting language, or missing language, or things that I think planners and citizens would rather not see in their city in terms of signs. Just a lot of things that could be updated and made better and help Monroe have a clean view shed with appropriate signs that guide people to the businesses, to all businesses that we want people to easily find. And then around the beginning of 2012, we began a little more earnest effort. We put an ad hoc committee together, and we began looking at basically what's wrong with the sign ordinance, what we'd like to see new in the sign ordinance, there'd be certain abilities that we don't have now that probably would be smart for a growing city to have. And we put together a short list that you'll find on the front page of your cover letter, and these are just bulleted points. It may not even make sense to you right off the bat, but you can always call me. I don't think that I'll go point by point tonight, but I'm willing to. But like I said, anytime I'm available to talk about this stuff. So then that process evolved to realizing that in order to get this done with the staff we have and the resource of time and things like that we would do best to look into the possibility of hiring a consultant that moved forward, and we were given a budget, and we went out and did RFPs to look for sign code experts, and we were lucky enough to get Tom Beckwith here on my left. He was very experienced at working with sign codes, and he has gotten us out of the blocks by, first of all, breaking down our existing sign code into a new format that we think would serve the city well into the the near future and beyond. In terms of clarity, of being able to quickly see how big of a sign a building can have, what kinds of sign a building can have, or a property, those kinds of things. And as, I guess I could almost call myself the regulator of signs, because they pretty much all come through me for review against the code, I would say having it be clear and concise and easy to read and explain over the telephone and explain to somebody when they're in the office would be very efficient and lend some confidence on both sides to the process. So Tom's put together a few things. He's put together a table that you have before you, and tonight the table that we're looking at is the existing code put into a table format. And that, I think that wants to be the center of our attention tonight. We've fairly transcribed the current code into the table. That we haven't missed anything, that this table format is working for all of you. And to begin looking at some things that we may want to correct in the future. And the sort of bottom line of that is that the real correcting, updating, rewriting of the code will come in future weeks, but tonight we want to look at, okay, did we translate the sign code properly? And then I've got a couple other slides for you that came in your packet, and then I have up on the screen as well. One is this one that I just happened to put up there because it was the most colorful to start our evening now with. And that's illustrations of types of signs. If we were to have some pages like this in our new sign code, it would be a very practical thing for us sign regulators to have before us. Again, a lot of times we're talking to people over the phone. What can I do? What kind of signs can I have on my property? We can direct them to the website and say, see these signs, or see number A, or sign 3, or you know, whatever it is. So there's two of those, pretty straightforward, so that people understand. The different types of signs that we're talking about, what we may be talking about. And then the other piece of the puzzle was, I guess that's it. We handed out the Monroe Municipal Code that has been gone through by Tom. It's gotten a red line strikeout type version to make it compatible with his tables. And then the last thing, if we have time and interest in doing it tonight, he put together another set of slides that I'll put up as needed. And that is a set similar to what we have up on the screen now, except that the signs are drawn to scale and are scaled so that when you are looking at them, or when I am looking at them with an applicant, we can say, this is what a 4-foot by 5-foot wall sign would look like on a building, or this is what a 10-foot by 12-foot tall ground mounted sign would look like, etc., and have a little better idea of how to picture that. So I've just kind of scratched the surface and sort of laid out some of the pieces we want to go over with you tonight. And I think that at this point, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Tom. I know he's got some great stuff put together, great stuff to say, so let's let him have at it.
If I talk loud, can you hear me? I said that usually we divide this into two phases. The first is style, and the second is substance. So on the issue of style is to try to organize your ordinance into a very easy-to-understand format. And that uses tables and graphics and tries to minimize words as much as possible. And when we're going through the style, we're not trying to critique exactly what your intent is. Just let's get it in a format that we understand, we can communicate. The second phase is substance, and that's to take a look at what you're really trying to do now that we have style and see if that's exactly what you want the outcome to be. So tonight I thought we, since I couldn't make the meeting on the 19th, tonight would be a good opportunity for us to go through the style and see exactly what you have, how it's organized, where some of the issues are starting to pop up just as we've started to translate it. And I'll have to apologize. I've had a family sabbatical for about 2 weeks, so I may be a little rusty on catching up where we are at that time. First is just what these building sign elements are. Now, you've all seen these from the packet from before, so you know what the different kinds of signs and the building elements are. So, for example, there are window signs. There are what's called canopy and awning signs, or the ones that stick are on the awning itself. There's under-awning signs, hang down below. There's blade or loo instead of an awning. That's where just the blade comes right out from the building. It's mounted on the building rather than hung under the awning. There's projecting signs. These are projecting signs. There's wall directories. This is a wall directory. Usually it's indicating what's in the building, what are all the tenants in the building. It's not a wall sign. It's a directory. There's a wall sign itself. Usually those are used to identify whoever the tenant is. Sometimes they're used to identify what the building is. And then there's a sandwich sign, or sometimes you call them A-frame or sometimes portables. Okay, before we leave this, look at how many surfaces you can fill up with signs. Not even getting into what the sizes of some of these are yet. So if you had a tenant here, and a tenant here, and a tenant here, and a tenant here, and you had different tenants up here, and they all had were all a lot of signs, that's a lot of surface. And when we go to freestanding signs, this is an example of what we call a monument sign. In other words, there's no frame to it, it sits right on the ground. This is a pedestal sign. The only difference is it sits on the ground too, but it's higher. This is what's called a pylon. Same thing. This is a single pole, freestanding. This is a double pole. Usually there's a directory. So this is the main tenant, secondary tenant, and so on. Now, what's interesting is when we start looking at what the sizes of some of these are, if we take this size and drop it down and plop it in here, it sometimes can look bigger because it's mounted to the ground. And the ground makes it appear bigger than when it's free-floating up in the air. And the other issue is how tall if it's free-floating in the air, and sometimes what the frame itself can do to the presence of the sign. If you look in the 50s and you look at old pictures, you even see them today in the Les Schwab signs, there'll be a simple, single little pole up here, and then there'll be a mammoth kind of sign hanging off that pole. And in its square footage, it's a big square footage, but it seems small because it's got a small little pole and it's way up in the air. If you've seen contemporary sign manufacturers, what they're doing is they're surrounding that sign with a big frame, and they're keeping it closer to the ground. It looks bigger, and it's actually smaller than those Les Schwab signs. But visually, it appears bigger. So the whole issue is it's in the eye of the beholder. That determines whether it's an effective sign or not, and then that translates into how effective your ordinance is or not. Go to the next page. And we'll talk about how to measure the signs. Now, what we're talking about is the face of the sign. The sign does not include its frame. And so, as I said, sometimes in order to make your sign look really big, you put a big frame on it, even though the face of the sign doesn't change at all, and the big frame makes it look bigger. Now, the faces then are this face, or this face, or this face, or this face, not the not the frame itself, and not the area that may be captured in that void, just the face. And if they have a logo or emblem, as you see in the letters here, SIGN, the sign is measured that whole area that the, that fills, not just the sign. Unless it's an emblem. And we'll get into how to measure emblems later, but if you can imagine Best Buy. Best Buy has a logo, but half of the building is painted blue. Only the logo is measured as the commercial message, even though the big blue helps establish to you right away that it's a Best Buy sign or Best Buy building. Now, sometimes because they're irregular, this is just an averaging technique. If they can measure exactly the surface of everything, that's great. If they can't and these get kind of difficult, then simply you use geometric shapes and take whatever your average is.
Okay. I got a question for you on that. I work for a company that we design restaurants, and when we get involved with signage, each jurisdiction is different, but when you're dealing with regulating these signage, when you get to a square footage, maximum square footage, who determines how you come up with that average on that rectangle, say, because we've run into this before. If you're not taking a true square footage of the actual sign, is that something that has to be approved by whoever's reviewing it at the city? Does the city say, this is what we say it is, and it fits within our guidelines?
I think you had two questions. Yep. One, if you know the exact surface of this, cool.
Okay.
If you don't know the exact surface, this averaging is just a quick and dirty way of trying to come up with it. As to whether or not it meets your code, then that's going to be up to whoever your staff person is reviewing it. So if you know the exact surface and the exact surface is within what's allowed in your ordinance, great.
Okay, so you don't have any particular formula or anything you do. It's basically going to be up to interpretation by whoever's reviewing it then?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Now, you know, most when you do a sign, you have drawings and blueprints. And it's pretty easy to measure off of that exactly what the surface is.
Thank you.
The only time that you're going to have any, and this will go to your ordinance again, is if you use a logo and inside the logo is your commercial message, or you use art and inside the art is the commercial message, then your current ordinance or most ordinance will say you will measure the commercial message. Unless the logo is part of your advertising, then we measure the logo.
Thank you. Dave?
Tom, I can see where that would make sense in the example of your Best Buy where they've painted the wall. But if you've got a freestanding sign, that argument doesn't stand, does it?
Well, you didn't paint the sky blue. You measure the sign surface.
You would actually measure the sign regardless of what the content was.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Although, as I said, sometimes they'll put these big squares up and then they'll put a logo in there, and inside that logo is, quote, your commercial message. Nonetheless, the logo is the message.
It is the sign.
Right.
Yeah.
So let's go to this table. I think this is the one that you had in your packet, the black and white version. So what we're trying to do here is we organize these all into a couple different categories, as you can see. And one of the very first categories we'll call access, landmark, and informational signs. And then this is permanent signs in residential zones. This is the type sign, or the purpose of the sign. This is its purpose. This is its type. This is whether or not a permit is required, the number of signs that are allowed by whatever we measure by, the area, maximum, per sign in square footage, unless we have, it's always in square footage, the height in feet, the setback in feet, and then the comments. And these are usually the formulas that are in your ordinance. Now these footnotes up in here, in this case, in the column headings, most of those are like in square feet, it says how to measure it. If it says it's in a height, then the issue is how to, and the footnotes tells you how to measure the height and where and the site to measure. And if there's a setback, then the same thing, it tells you what that is. Unless, as you get clear to the end of the table, we want to minimize this as much as possible, there are deviations in certain zones or there are deviations in how to measure it. Now, one of your issues in your current ordinance is there's nothing in there about how to define these kinds of signs. And for example, if you go into any fast food or you go into any bank or whatever, there's always a sign that says this way in and this way out. So nothing in your current order says how many of these and what size they should be. And that's that kind of question that will come up. Another would be what's called a landmark sign, where you put something up that says this building was built in a certain date, or this building is the Oddfellows Hall or something else. There's nothing there either. And there's no informational signs for a private. And these can be everything from addresses to, in some cases, the keep out, I got a bad dog or got something else. And sometimes these get to be kind of the irritants to the staff and the irritants to the public when they come in, and you just simply haven't defined them, even though you know that they're going to want to put up such a sign. Now, what you do have are these specifications of what we call permanent signs in the residential zones, and also residential uses in these zones, which is covers most of their areas. So the first would be ID of the dwelling unit. You can have a wall or freestanding sign that tells you the address. In some cases, you may even use your name. And what you, in your current ordinance, is 12 square feet is the maximum allowable, one per property. And you can see that in this case, it said 5-foot setback. And in this case, both of those cases said you need permits. Where I put in the gray is because I've inferred that your ordinance is saying that for the sign, but it just didn't put it in the language. So, for example, you'll see almost in every case a 5-foot setback, unless there's a difference in the ordinances, is different. And in almost all cases, you'll see that it's one per whatever the measurement is, even though your ordinance forgot to say that or make that clear. So, these are pretty clear. In most cases, most of your signs are per property or per building. Later on, things get a little complicated when your ordinance tries to accommodate buildings that may be smaller than the property. And then you have some of these lessers of and lessers or. And in that case, the lesser is trying to say, well, if you have a small building on a big property, you're not going to be allowed a big sign because your property is big and your building is small, then you've got to use the lesser or. But these are pretty clear. Now, the only issue is permits required, and normally permits are usually required in everything until you start getting into the temporary or you're starting to get into limited duration. Temporary signs would be a building for rent or a political sign. Now, the issue, even though you may be requiring a permit, is to get it as simple as possible, your procedures as simple as possible, and the interpretation as minimal as you can. And later in the ordinance, you may want to debate which of these require what kind of form. And the one thing we say is don't put that kind of administrative detail in your ordinance. Because then any time you want to change a form, then you've got to go back to the ordinance and you've got to go to your public hearings. So basically let your ordinance say your intent and do all administrative and the fee stuff by resolution separately. So you have dwelling unit, home occupation, multifamily buildings, and residential complexes. And you can see these are walls and freestanding signs. Although in some cases we allow monuments and gateways, though your ordinance doesn't specify that. And a monument and a gateway would be for a residential development, like the big sign out there that says Monroe Heights. Okay. The only issue here is the multifamily. You've defined it as four more dwelling units. And for a residential complex, you define it as four more dwelling units, and you allow two signs per public entrance, because some of your what you're doing is indicating to the street what the complex is. So there's more than one public entrance, then you have a formula that relates to each entrance. Any questions on that one? Okay, next. Now we're into permanent signs in these zones. And we're basically doing advertising. And these are the signs as you define them in your current ordinance. Portables, which is sandwich. Window. Now, your ordinance doesn't make any differentiation between what we call opaque and transparent. Opaque can be you put a poster up inside the window that blocks out the view inside the building. Most ordinances have a varying form between what can be actually blotted out and what has to be transparent. Transparent can be something you can see through. If you've seen a lot of the new modern or more modern retail stores, they'll have their little logo running across the store. In some cases, even Starbucks has their emblem there, but you can see through it and see what's going on in the store or the goods that they're displaying. So that'd be a question later on, whether you want to break this into opaque versus transparent. Then you have under awnings, and sometimes we allow either or, so you can't have them hanging from the awning and also have them projecting out from the building. That's kind of overkill to a certain extent. Informational on the wall, informational freestanding, a wall mural, and the question always in wall murals is, what is a mural? Is it artwork or not? And is it commercial or not? Which percent of that is that? Roof signs, you're probably one of the few lately that I've seen that allows roof signs. Roof signs are kind of passe in the industry, and they also raise a lot of questions about exactly how it's done and what its impact is. Projecting signs, and then you have a couple things in here about changeable messages and electronics. And what these are really saying is you're subject to these other codes, but a percent of that sign, of the allowable area, can be changeable message or electronic. And unfortunately, defining what can be changeable and defining what's electronic and some of the lighting issues and some of the other things can only be done in the ordinance itself. And the industry, this is the most volatile area of technological change in the industry, is that you can see all the flashing signs, you can see all the message signs and so on, and managing these would be, there's no way to do that graphically. And then you have off-premise. Now, you don't currently have any off-premise for single or multi-tenant. And off-premise are supposed to manage when you have a business park development, or sometimes you have a commercial development, and the stores are around in the back of the building, or it's a courtyard complex, or it's an office park complex, and the tenants are not visible from the street. And then your issue of an off-premise is that supposedly up on the street you can put what that use is and how to, and it arrows at least as to where it's located. Okay. Now, in this case, you can see I've got a few filled-in areas where we've extrapolated more or less and said your code, this is the intent of your code, even though I forgot to call out exactly what those are. And you can see now also in some cases your code went so far as to say like a portable sandwich sign gave exactly what your dimensions are. Most cases we don't do that, we just say square footage. Now here's an interesting one though. Your current ordinance says you can have a window sign, but you can only have one per building there. And if you saw that example of an older building that had multiple windows, and supposedly the ordinance says you can only have one window with a window sign in it. Usually we do this per window. Whatever that percent is, it applies to every window that faces the street. Here's your mural for your wall, and you see what your current ordinance allows is 25% of that can be your commercial message. Now, for Best Buy, that's not a wall mural. I don't know. Okay, do you have any wall murals? I didn't see any when I did your inventory.
We do.
Where's your wall mural?
We've got one on the Napa building. We've got one on the flooring store on North Main Street or North Lewis Street.
Do they have any commercial messages in them?
Well, that was a question I was going to ask tonight. But since you brought it up now, yeah, the Napa one is the full side of the building, and it's a depiction of Napa 50 years ago.
But does it have any commercial message?
It says Napa on it. It shows a store.
It shows a store as it was 50 years ago?
Yes, with Napa on it.
Well, there's the Coca-Cola
and too. There's Coca-Cola on the other end of town, unrelated to any business there, but it's got a Coke bottle on it. Old Coke bottle. Isn't that an advertisement?
Coke bottles would be difficult because that's a product, not the
okay.
business. So, and the question when you get into quote, now you see we don't have anything in here that says just art. But if you got into the Coke bottle, for example, the question would be, was that a historical sign?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
gonna be done.
Yeah.
Then usually your language would exempt an historical sign that's product related if it has some historical precedent. But if it's the Napa Valley, and I can't remember it.
Napa Auto Parts.
Then the question would, and he's painting his store, that would be dicey, but I would think it would be the sign on his building is what you would measure as the commercial message.
And as long as we're on it, 25% of their allowable sign area, That's a really small mural, isn't it?
Percent commercial of allowable site area. That's the way your current ordinance reads.
Can we back up? Commissioners, sure. I'm drowning. Tom, I'm sorry.
Sure.
If we're going to go through this table, I think if you want feedback, at least from me, I'd like if we went through section by section and talked about those sections rather than having you go through the whole chart or whole form and then ask us to go back over and talk about it. Am I the only one feeling that way?
Well, no, I'm asking you to talk as we go.
Okay.
So my question, if I may jump in on this, is I thought there was going to be kind of two parts to this. One is more style, and what I understood this and why I wasn't looking too detailed as far as specifically was that we're looking at the style of this chart, if you will, and then we're going to be getting into the actual code and the details, percentages, square footage, and all that. Is that a substance?
That's the substance.
Is that going to be later on, or is that was that planned for tonight?
I would say later on. That's your second phase.
Okay.
But I think it's okay to call out what the questions are and whether or not your current ordinance is clear on what it's trying to get across.
Okay. Does that help?
Well, it does, because actually I think the style question for discussion is probably a whole lot shorter. Do we like the table or not, as far as the concept goes. Content, obviously, I think gets a whole lot more involved. Yeah. We have a redlined version of the current code from our last week's package.
Right, the strikeout version.
The strikeout version. Mm-hmm. The one that was passed out to us tonight, is this the proposed new version? I see it's got...
No, that's just scrub. That's taken out all the strikeouts just so you can see what the result,
okay,
what the aftermath is.
And then adding in the sign allowance table section.
Correct.
When I look back at, since we're talking about murals, when I look back at last week's red line, I didn't see any limitation on size in here with regard to murals. I don't know where that came from.
There's not.
Well, I'll have to double check it, but you see it's not gray, and it's not a proposal.
There's the code. Right there.
I think there are two paragraphs relating to murals.
Yeah. Oh, well, the word, current code says, murals containing a commercial sign message to require a sign permit. Which only be allowed in these zones. The commercial display area of the mural shall be calculated against the allowed signage for the site.
Okay. That's saying something different, I think.
Yes. I mean...
So if I understand...
Okay, because I think you're allowed 25% of the wall to be in the mural... that has the commercial message.
So that portion of the mural that's commercial in nature can't exceed 25% of your total sign allowance?
Because that's your wall. Your wall sign can't be more than 25%. And if your mural's bigger than that, that's cool, but all, your commercial message can't be bigger than 25% because that's what you're allowed on a wall.
And I don't see the 25% in here.
Not on the mural, because that goes back to your wall sign.
Okay, so that's... Are we talking mural or are we talking wall sign?
You're talking a wall sign that you're using. Your wall sign can only be 25% of the surface of the building. Okay? If you create a mural that covers the whole building, the part that's commercial in that still cannot exceed the allowable wall sign area, which is 25%. This is poorly stated. Okay.
I would agree.
Okay, you yes. Agree?
The 25...
Mark that down.
We agree that there's a clarification needed.
All right.
Yes.
Now, keep in mind, there's plenty of these kinds of... In most cases, these were lifted right out of your ordinance. And as they drop in here, the whole idea is to make them intelligible. And frankly... A number of phrasings in your ordinance are not very clear as to what they're trying to say. So part of the style would be, let's get it clear.
So perhaps then we should focus on the style question before we get into content.
Correct.
Great. And then I guess the question I have then would be, are you, when we get to the content, are you going to go through this yourself with the recommendations and the changes? It sounds like...
Or we get the substance?
In, yeah, the substance.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go through it.
So then we can recognize that this is definitely not a proposed finished document. It's more of this is how
it goes
with
the
current code. We're going to modify these things. This is going to come back and have some possibly significant changes, some minimal changes on other things. And
probably.
But as you pointed out, there's some areas that you put in there that we don't have anything, we don't even address. That will be something that we can see in the future, probably will be addressed.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay.
Even though I've translated this in here, I think that when we get to the substance, we want to clean up what we're trying to say and then focus on what we want to do.
Right.
But there's some really, and you'll see these as we go on, and one of the things I want to point out to you tonight is where I see them, at least so far, maybe where you see them. So when we get into the substance, you'll see that the language has changed to try to make them clear.
Great, thank you. And I think Commissioner Christensen had a question.
Yeah, I just a question on, I have in the packet here, existing, and that's what you're going through now is what
right,
existing.
Right, right.
Okay, not the proposed.
No, not the proposed. In fact, the proposed is still in progress. It's a little, okay. It's a little premature to hand it out.
I want to make sure I was going on the right paper. Okay, thank you.
Okay, now here's your roof sign. 4 foot height limit, that means the sign can't be more than 4 foot above the roof, not permitted within 25 feet of the public right-of-way, so you can't just erect it right on the edge of the right-of-way, or located on top of or above the roof ridge. So if you have a sloping roof that says you can't have it 25 feet, if that is right on the edge of the right-of-way, you've got to back it up 25 feet, and it cannot exceed the top of the edge of the roof. Now, a lot of the more current commercial buildings are false front with very flat or sloping roofs behind that, so the roof signs have kind of gone out except for the old mansard kind of frontage buildings. That's why you don't see very many of them. Now, the only real violator of some roof signs is when people start painting the roof itself to get the sign across. But this is your current language. And you can see you're only allowed 20 square feet. That's not a very big sign.
Right. Dave, you have a question?
Tom, it would help me if we would have the discussion about style and get that behind us, and then go to the top and start at the top and start talking about substance. Am I alone on that, commissioners?
I guess I'd want to know, because you are kind of touching some of the substance as we go along, and so it does seem to kind of feel like we're trying to accomplish both, and what you'll find with us is once we start getting into substance, we'll start getting pretty specific and kind of have...
Well, I guess all I'm trying to say is I'm trying to tell you what's in your current ordinance.
But that's not really related to style, is it?
Oh, yeah. Style's content.
Not as I thought I heard you describe style in the process as you look at it, as to how we're going to present this information in the ordinance.
That was something I came up with. You also had talked about the wall signs and the monument signs and that was part of the styling. And so if I'm understanding here, you're describing, say, like the roof sign, you're talking about our current style on a roof is this. Doesn't mean that's what we're going to want.
Correct.
But this is what we currently have.
This is what your ordinance currently says as we try to translate it in style-wise in this table.
I follow where you're going, but I guess I misunderstood. When you talked about style and you talked about substance, substance to me is content. Style is format and presentation.
Correct.
And to me, they're rather distinct, and maybe that's because I...
They are. I guess all I'm trying to do is say, this is the style. Put it into the table. Because we dropped it into the table, this is the way it translated. This is the substance of your ordinance, even though we're not talking about making any changes. This is to clarify what your ordinance says in this format. Is that clear enough? That's what I'm trying to do without getting into what it should be. This is just what it is.
And I understand that.
Okay.
And I appreciate that depiction. I would like to get the question of style done as it goes to format and presentation, not content at all.
Okay, gotcha.
But if I'm alone on that, I'll be quiet and go along.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think it was our meeting in October when we had our first introduction to this work with Tom. And really the purpose of that meeting was to introduce what I would call the style, as you said, Dave, the format of this change from the...
It's the style of the presentation, not the style of the slides.
I understand, yes.
Okay. The change from the written form to the table format, just to get that concept in your minds of how this information would be displayed and presented in the code.
I agree.
And there seemed to be some good consensus among the commissioners that this was a good format, or what I would call a good style.
Do you want to talk about that? Like the table versus...
Can I?
I think that we can put that question to bed very quickly.
Yeah.
In my opinion. And to me, then the next comment goes, or next discussion goes to content, mm-hmm. which is going to be more involved in a much slower process than what we're going through at this point.
Correct. And there may be areas that we don't even need to cover again if you're satisfied with what your current ordinance says and focus on the areas that you do have questions.
Well, I, for one, am, I think, satisfied with the format, the style, and the way it's proposed to present this to make it easier to use. I certainly support that.
I agree. Is there anyone on the commission that would disagree with this format as far as having a chart this way? It seems to work for me.
I think it's fairly easy for a person like me that's never dealt with signs to look at this, you know, just as I was sitting at home and going, okay, this is what we have now, this is what they're proposing, and it's just, I think it's a very easy read. Very easy read.
Still?
As far as the layout and finding things easily, I think that's awesome. I still think as going through some of the text that's like in the comments area, there's still a whole bunch of things in there that I think are just gibberish in my brain. It sounds like gibberish. So to me, that was all kind of, you know, what? How do you get what was in the written word into this style of document? To me, that's what was important. I think that's what you were trying to show going through it. And to me, that was important just to see, well, how do I get what was in the text into this tape and make sense out of it? So going through it the way it's translated into the table as is important to me. I was finding it informative, you know, to go through that.
And I agree with that. I just wasn't quite ready for that conversation yet. I thought we were going really fast through a really complex issue that I've got a number of comments on, and I suspect others will too, that I think I, for one, at least, would be better to approach it incrementally, and let's talk about it, let's make sure we understand it when we get to content, and then move on to the next section.
Bill?
Yeah, I think, you know, to get into discussion, I agree. But just to cover the style, I think this is what was being attempted here, is to just to say, this is what we did. We took the text out of that thick thing, put it in a table, and this is how it fit in. And just to have that presented is one thing. Discussion is altogether different. When you get into it later in detail, that's fine. So I'm letting some of this stuff, you know, hit me in the face. So I really didn't understand it. When we get into the discussion, then maybe it'll make a lot more sense. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's where I'm.
Jeff, you okay with this format?
Yes.
Yes.
Appreciate it. Express your opinion, you're good there.
Can I ask?
So Just my my question is more to Dave, because I know you were wanting to address this differently. Are you wanting to take a different approach than we have then?
I think we're pretty clear that the presentation is good. Okay. The approach makes a lot of sense. And Bill, I appreciate what you're saying about Tom, the way you're picking some of these things out and using them, I guess, for lack of better words, as an example of how you got to this. You reached into our code, this is what you pulled out, this is what you extrapolated, just for demonstration purpose, perhaps.
Correct.
I don't want to see us spend too much of your time or our time on the demonstration part of it. I think I at least get the idea of what you've said. I'd like to see us move into the substance part of it.
Well, I'd like to, if you're comfortable the way I've been doing it, I'd like to finish that and then come back, fill in the blanks that we've already done on the proposed, even though we've not made all some of these other changes. So if that's okay, we could be done with this part in about 15 minutes.
Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Okay.
Oh, well, we usually wait till the end of our discussion. If you can wait, that's all right. Commissioners, any objection to getting some comments from the public at this time?
No.
Real quick. Just so you, when you're looking at it, I kind of know this written one really well, and there's quite a number of these that when you pulled them out, they didn't translate. And
right.
So, like, murals, for example, are in two places and that type of thing. So,
In this or in the ordinance?
This one. Your chart has some differences from the written part. For example, murals are in two places and have different numbers on different ones. So, just an FYI.
There's two questions there. If we're going into permanent signs or in this category, for example, later on we'll be in different zones, we may still have some of these same categories repeated. So murals, if they're allowed in permanent signs in these zones, they may also be allowed in some other zone as well.
You'll see it when you get to it.
Okay, as much as possible, we try to do this by zones. If we were to pull these out and use this as the organizing element, then that gets you right back to your current ordinance, and that just gets too confusing. Now, whether or not I translated these things from your ordinance properly, that's also a question. So if I've not done it properly, or in some cases if I've not interpolated it properly, then call them out so we make sure that we do that. Now, to finish up this part, this is electronic only in the GC zone. You can see that doesn't apply to every other zone, only in the general commercial. And again, there's your ordinance doesn't have anything for you here. Now, these are your permanent signs in the public zones, PS and LOS. You see you have wall, you have freestanding signs, and you have those by daycare and those by school. Now, this is where in your current ordinance, you start getting into these double formulas. And what they're trying to do is take and identify what's allowed on a building, small building, let's say on a large lot, so that if you were simply to do it against the lot and you had a small building, that would overpower the building. So you've got numerous cases where you had the lesser of or something other formula. And the question is how to do that in such, if this is what you still want to do, how to do it so it's very clear. Because normally you would have, it would all sit in here. Normally, it would be 80 square feet, for example, would be your default. Now, if we do have the multiple formulas, they need to be here, not in the footnotes. If they're in the footnotes, and the problem is footnotes get lost. And then you've not really solved or made anything clear. Something else you'll see that I've broken these out because your current ordinance has specifications on the length of your frontage. Now, presumably, as you've measured in your ordinance, that's under one ownership. So if you have multiple tenants, it's still and there's one owner, you're still under this kind of how much is the frontage. So you have a different formula in some cases based on the length of the frontage. The other thing is you do have must be 200 feet apart.
So even though if you have a long frontage, you can't put the signs side by side. Got to be spaced. So in some cases, depending on what your the geometrics of your property, you may not be able to get all these things depending on how it's configured. These are the, this is the office zone, and you see you have Walton. And in the office zone, there are more directories than you usually see in the commercial zone, but you have a wall if it's a tenant, a wall if it's a multiple, a wall if it's a directory, a wall if it's artwork. You see where it's starting showing up here, and this is not in your current ordinance. Then you have freestanding if it's under 200, freestanding if it's over, freestanding if it's multiple, under 200, freestanding if it's over. And you can see how these are the formulas you currently have. And one of your issues, let's just take this one here. This is a single tenant where the lot is less than 200 feet frontage. One sign per street frontage. Now, if you're surrounded on all four sides, you're the only property, then you're going to have a sign on all four streets under this formula. And sites allowed more than one sign may have 40 additional square feet above the maximum towards a freestanding or wall sign, provided the total signage does not exceed 120 square feet. So the issue here is that what it's trying to do is say, okay, you're allowed 32 square feet, 10 foot high per each street. But then they're trying to say that there, you also have something in here where you're trying to say, if we add all the signs together that you're allowed, freestanding, wall, everything else, there's a maximum. Now that's, in some cases, that is not a bad idea, simply because if you put up all these things individually, they can be very cluttered. The issue is to make sure you're comfortable with what these maximums are, because you see, they don't fill that column. So you really run into two issues. Per sign, per frontage, the length of the frontage, and then a max.
Okay. I can do it.
Okay. These are your downtown, except rails and roads neighborhood. So now you're into different kinds of signs. You have your window, you have your awning and canopy, you have your suspended under the awning, you have a blade in lieu of awning, if that's what you choose to do. You have a wall of a single tenant, a wall multi-tenant, a roof sign, and then you have monuments. Monuments mounted ground, the ground that mounted that I showed you before. Now, in your window opaque, that's 25% of the window. In this case, it's not misstated as it was. Keep in mind, every time we translated into the table, we took it out of each zone, and it didn't mean that they were consistent. And sometimes they're not consistent between a commercial zone, say, and a public zone on purpose. Sometimes they're not consistent simply because your ordinance wrote them at different times. And as it did, it applied one formula in one place and a different formula in another place. So you see, this one doesn't say one window per building wall. It says per window. And it's percent of the window area, and it may be painted on the window or hung inside. So you can hang a poster right behind the glass on the inside, and under your current ordinance, that's considered window side. Then these are allowed per tenant space. That's a typical formula. For your wall single tenant, then you see this is 100 square feet. It's not based on a percentage. And there is a formula, 2 square feet per 1 square foot of building frontage per street frontage or secondary pedestrian facade. And the idea being there that if you have a side entrance into the complex, then you can do the same thing on that facade. Your issue here is to make sure ordinance defines what a pedestrian facade is accurately.
Which it does not.
Right. And the only thing here is these monuments usually, because these end up in the sidewalk space, we usually don't have freestanding or monument signs in downtown zones. And here, in your case, it says one per street frontage, and Lewis Street is a different standard in square footage and height than the rest of it. Okay. Any questions on this? Okay, next. These are permanent general and service commercial zones. GCSC includes downtowns, rails and roads neighborhood. So we have wall, single tenant, awning and canopy, wall and multi-tenant, directories, artwork and mural. This is as much as it's in there. Freestanding of under 4, over 4, multi under 4, over 4, and then changeable message as a percent of whatever these are allowed.
But keep in mind that changeable message can be a freestanding, it can be a monument sign, it can be any other of the other signs. So take a gander at this. This is your multi-tenant, you're allowed 300 square feet, you're allowed one per sign, you're allowed 1.5 square feet per 1 foot linear of building frontage for each additional tenant after the first. You're allowed a little bit more, not to exceed 420 for the entire site. The site is reached to the max, and blah, 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 blah. But it is an accurate depiction of what's in your current ordinance, but you see it's trying to do multiple things here. And in some respects, it may not be all that easy to simplify because you've got multiple objectives within that comment. And the issue later on will be, are these the right numbers or not? Okay? And you can see the same thing of the freestanding, and you can see the same thing of multi-tenant. Okay? Now, one interesting thing here on your gas, this is changeable message gas, 100% of that can be changeable. Now, this is changeable, not electronic. Because the bulk of these are what your price is for gas. And changeable message on a movie, 80% of that can be changeable. Now, it's interesting that you classify it as changeable, not changeable or electronic. Okay, next. These are your industrial districts, LIGI. Now, usually, this is where we start pushing the monument signs, but you have nothing in your ordinance for monument. You have wall single tenant, wall multiple tenant, and then you're freestanding based on size. And these have a similar kind of formula of 1 per street frontage, plus 60 additional above the site maximum applied towards a freestanding or wall sign, provided the total does not exceed a certain square footage. Now, one thing that was interesting is your ordinance doesn't always clarify that that's to be the maximum total. That's the intent. But as these things were added into the ordinance over and over and over again, they didn't always make every editing cut.
Okay.
Just a question on that changeable signs, Tom. I know this goes a little bit more to content. But I look at the definition in the current code. It says signs changing the message means any sign capable of changing the message by means of manual methods. The theater probably is a good example of that because I think they still do that with manual. The gas stations, those are electronic signs, aren't they? Most of them?
Both. Both.
But so wouldn't there be a distinction there?
It will come into whether we want to, in the ordinance language itself, make changeable either electronic or manual. Some of the older gas stations, or some of the new ones, in fact, still use the manual.
Mm-hmm.
But increasingly, you're starting to see more as electronics got cheaper, the electronic versions. And it's still a changeable message. The issue in, if it's changeable manually, then usually the question is, given the sign face itself, there's going to be a maximum size to it. The issue if it's electronic is how much, is how strong that is, how frequently it flashes, what its ambient, what its illumination is, daytime, nighttime, so on and so on. So electronic has a lot more nuances to address than just the changeables. But your current ordinance, you say, says changeable, not electronic, on gas, for example.
But it makes a distinction between manual and electronic. A changeable sign is a manual sign.
That's the way your current ordinance does.
Right. Okay.
And if I may, real quick, Tom, do you have a suggestion that you will be giving us in the future for that addressing this?
The changeable and electronic?
Yeah.
We'll give you what the industry's current ideas are electronic on light pulse, illumination standards, and so on. And frankly, you got to monitor that because that's the most dynamic. And there's some issues as to just how distracted it used to be. It used to be that we banned what we call pulsating lights. That was the old strobes, you know, they're going on because we considered them distracting to drivers. But if you've been down through Puyallup when they first put up that big sign and it pulsated out, well, the first time I went through there, I that's all I saw for a while. Well, now I don't even know it's there. And that's what the industry is also measuring. What's its immediate impact versus its long-term impact? So a lot of the research that's coming in is pretty interesting on that kind of assumption.
Hmm. All right, thank you.
It also doesn't get to content either. Naked babes, you know, have very different implication than puppy dogs. All right, next. Limited duration. Now, these usually, you saw I put a table in even your ordinance that said how long they could be up and when they came down. And that's a whole, you can't really, it's pretty difficult to drop that in here. It's its own table. But for limited duration, there's sale, basically, of residential lots and subdivisions, of commercial lots and tracts, construction, residential sale or rental, commercial sale or rental. Almost all of these are freestanding. However, you can have banners under construction, you can have window posters, and you see under your commercial, you don't have anything in here in your current ordinance for these kinds of signs under commercial and rental. In some cases, in some cities, those are the most egregious violators. So the issue I think that was a little bit surprising to me is you specify certain sizes, and normally we just say this is the square footage. The industry has kind of worked out what some of these are in size. The difference in some of these is just how big they can get to be and how they're mounted and made secure. Now, the other issue that comes in these, and these are limited, these are construction and big sale, not house sales. Those come under temporary, is how many public entrances and how many streets you can put them on. And you can see down under the construction, it's trying to specify how many more players can be on the sign and how many signs it can have. If you've been to a recent construction site, usually they put up a kind of a canvas banner, and it'll be whoever the builder is, and sometimes there's the architect, and sometimes the subcontractors, and so on. Increasingly, what they usually say is you get one banner, and you guys figure out how you divide it up. Okay, any questions on this? You can see this is the one area I think your current ordinance needs to address, and this area you will need to address. That's where you usually have the most trouble. Okay, next. Temporary signs. These are open house sale, special event garage, special event retail sale, special event of government or public activity, political on the public right of way. These are sandwich, then window posters and wall banners, inflatables, and then banners as well as freestanding. And you see it does make a distinction here between single pole and double pole. Double poles are allowed to be bigger, but then there's structural issue to make sure they're secure. Now, there's some gray areas in here, so there's nothing here. I didn't interpolate anything, but there should be, because you doesn't say it. The ordinance says you can have it, but it doesn't specify anything else within your current ordinance for this kind of sign. The ones which are usually the problem are the walls and the banners for special events, because oftentimes these are volunteers. They don't always realize they could have got to come down and get a permit. And oftentimes they'll put it up, and that same volunteer doesn't realize he's got to take it down when the event's over. The other issue is the inflatables. They can get to be pretty big, and the only issue on them, and usually is in your ordinances, to make sure they're staked down and that they're not a hazard. One thing you don't have in here is balloons, like balloons on the car dealers. Stay away from that. The other issue is, I can't remember where it would be in here, but it's the product placement signs. If you're at a drive-in or any other restaurant and the local Coke dealer comes through, they'll have a special on Cokes, and it's a Coke product sign. And his agreement with his franchisor is if he gives him the sign, the franchisor has to put it up unless the city ordinance disallows it. And usually those go up, and you can see them all over town. They stay up forever. So one of the issues is that you see is as you look in here, is beware of the product placement signs that the product people will come and put up. And your ordinance needs to say it can only be business, not product, and basically the simplest way is to ban those signs. Ban those posters, ban those kinds of... Because if you don't,
The franchisor has no choice. His agreement is he's got to put them up.
We don't have the language on that.
No.
You're good?
I'm good.
Yeah. Wayne, do you have a
question? Yeah. I can't talk very good. Garage sale signs, yeah, I have to have a permit for that now.
I'm sorry?
Garage sale signs have to have a permit now?
Which kind of sign?
Garage sale.
Yeah, you can see special event for garage sales. This is in your ordinance, sandwich sign and directionals.
I was going to ask staff that question.
Yeah.
Do you really get people in here permits for garage sales?
No, we do not.
Very rarely, I mean, nothing in proportion to the garage sale signs that we get.
Yeah. Thank you. Dave?
Tom, I looked for the, I'm in the real estate industry, I looked for the open house signs, and I didn't see any in the current ordinance that said their permits required.
I'll have to look at that, because when I went through here, I was surprised. The only area that I found that wasn't specifically said no permits was political. Now, whether you need to provide all those as a permit is another issue. And again, it's how complicated it is. Usually, most cities will have, for these kinds of signs, come in as a one-page form, says, okay, you agree to abide. These are your requirements. That's it. So there, you know, permit required can depend on just exactly how you finesse the different levels of permits and how much you require them.
Well, and I think it may be an issue of interpretation, too, and I'm looking at the language right now, off-premises directional signs under real estate signs, and it says, for instance, residential uses in the public open space and limited open space zoning districts shall be permitted according to the following requirements. And I think the intent of that is that they're allowed subject to the following requirements, not to say that you got
to get a permit
based on the following requirements.
Could be. I think your question is, when we get into substance, which ones do you want permits on and which ones you don't? And the other issue is, like in sandwich signs, which are usually the biggest violators, does your ordinance allow you to enforce issues versus what you do in practicality? Example, everybody will violate the sandwich sign after a certain period of time. They'll either violate by how many they put up or where they put them. And then the issue is, if you don't have in your ordinance the ability to enforce, you can't enforce, even though when things get out of hand, even though you're not going to go out there with the sign police on a daily basis and try to enforce lots of things. So your issue becomes, how much do you need in there if you need to enforce something versus how much you just don't want to put in just because it becomes odorous. Footnotes. These are the ones we try to live with. So there's some general ones. Area under the sign is free of obstruction. This is telling you what it has to be, and particularly on the public rights of ways under awnings and canopies. This is one I added in. No sign shall be within 100 feet from school grounds or park. And usually that's a kind of a standard that the park zones and so on have no other visual distractions. They're schools as you approach them. Now, your only issue there is if you're at the edge of the property and you only have, say, a 25-foot lot, then you're going to have a problem. So the issue then becomes if there's exceptions, which you define as an exception. This one's in your current ordinance. All signs may be located at the public right-of-way. Under awning may extend 6 feet, and blades may extend 4 feet, or over where the sidewalk is at least 10 to 12 feet wide. That's pretty much your downtown. Most of your downtown commercial area is at least 10. But if you don't have this caveat, then you see you're going to have that sign over the whole sidewalk area. For column headings, this just defines some of the things we have up in here, how to measure the area. Next page. How to do the height, how to do the setback, in case it's not a property line if you're a tenant. And then these are the footnotes we just couldn't drop in so far into the columns. So one is parcels zone. Public PO. These are the streets that were some of the deviations. If the sign has reached the maximum, newly created tenant signs, that's If you already signed it all out and the property owner billed it all out and then he adds a new tenant, then your current ordinance allows him to redefine the formula to make room for the new tenant. And the last is no setback is allowed in the historic Main Street. So ideally, we don't want to end up with huge numbers of footnotes here. We kind of defeat the purpose of the table. So given a choice, I'd rather have a big column comment than have to go down in here to try to figure out what you're trying to do.
I think on the footnotes, I would say to staff, or maybe it's more of a question, I'm not sure. We have quite a trail system in the Frylands that I think is considered a park system. And so I'm not sure what that would do. I mean, I haven't given it half a thought until just now, but what that 100-foot setback would do, I know that that definition was used in our when it came to sex offenders having to register, they had to be so far from a park because we had that trail system that is considered part of the parks. So anyway, just something to think about.
Flip back to that page. One thing you could debate is this says no sign is defined which signs can be and which signs can't be. Just because usually the intent is we don't want a big flashing advertising sign so close to the school that it's distracting or that it begins to be commercialize the area, but this is pretty absolute no sign. That can get down to ID signs and street signs and entry signs and all kinds of things.
David? But that footnote refers to a specific part of the table, does it not? And only to those parts that are noted that way.
Yeah, where do we have these? I have to double check where we ended up with Beast. Can you, do you see them real quick?
No, I can't find them. And perhaps in the footnotes it might be worthwhile incorporating a cross-reference as to where it's coming from. But what is it related to? It's
what kind of sign?
Well, and I'm looking specifically at the B that we're talking about. Okay, so where in our table is footnote B?
I think it's because it's highlighted, it means I haven't done that yet.
So it may actually have a very limited application.
It could.
It may not apply.
These footnotes are definitely indexed to what's in here out of your ordinance. But this highlighted one is usually a standard. And I don't think I've footnoted where it would occur if you wanted it to occur. That was just to make sure you were checking on.
Were you worried, Tom?
No, I've been here before.
Yeah. Mr. Demers?
Yes.
I don't know if this answers your question or not, but earlier you mentioned about open houses.
Yes.
And since 1881-64, off-premises directional.
1881, what was it, 64 you said?
1881-60. And then I think it's ABCD4.
Right, and that's what I was looking at.
Okay. I misunderstood what you said. I thought you were saying you hadn't found anything. But I was sitting here going, I know I've seen open houses in there somewhere.
But my interpretation of that paragraph 4 is that shall be permitted at the very end isn't referring to getting a permit, but it's referring to permission, or shall be allowed. And I think maybe that's where that confusion came
and,
from.
And that's the kind of thing that we see throughout the code and that we hope to clear up.
Okay, how much time will we use? 8:30. Put the proposed up. But I'm going to put a caveat. The proposed is not really modifying any substance that you've just seen. It fills in the blanks to give you a formula. So let's just call it proposal one. But it will be useful, I think, to start with proposed as the base when we start getting substantive.
I put the proposed.
And then go
oh, wait. Oh, or was that on your list?
Flash drive. Yeah, from my flash drive.
All right. Give me 2 seconds here.
It was in our packet last week, Mike.
Yeah, and it hasn't changed from last
week. Yeah, I just didn't know we were going to use it on computer tonight, so... there's
that
the choices,
right there.
Tom.
That's it. Now, in the brown color is where I filled in blanks using standards from other ordinances that I've done to try to give a more balanced content. So, for example, you see I filled in all of these ID signs and all these zones, which we typically do. So, like an entry that's one per exit, you know, one per building frontage, and so on. And these sizes are pretty typical of most current ordinances. Okay. For the permanent signs, I filled in heights, and I filled in like the monument gateways is typical also. I've not changed any of this in the grade. I'm done a substantive there, but I've given you what I think is a more balanced palette. Go to the next page. Can you scroll down?
No.
Some?
I'm sure I can.
It should just go page to page.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's okay. These are the permanent signs, and these are the categories. This is a window. The opaque and transparent keeps the same percentage, but typically we give 50-50. So 50% opaque and 50% transparent. And the kinds of things that are in the opaque are the address, the operating hours, the credit card information, and so on. And the transparent is usually the commercial message. And down here you can see these are typicals for off-premise single and multi-tenant, one per adjacent arterial collector road, monument preferred. So if you're driving along and the building is in the back of the complex, you can have a monument on the arterial street that says this is where it is. It usually has an arrow that says Home Depot is in the back of the development. For the permanent signs, these are typical sizes, 24 and 24, for these kinds of freestanding, or wall signs, I mean. It indicates what these are used for. Next page. For office zones, these are the wall directories. One per building, subject to design review, and usually artwork. Artwork gets really dicey because oftentimes you want to punt the art into, if you have an arts commission to review whether or not, quote, the art is art. What you're doing here is what percent of that can be commercial and what percent of the building can it cover. Next. This is a downtown. These are usually, again, this opaque and transparent. The Honor Bay Academy, this is a typical size, 40%. And keep in mind, that's the band. As an awning sign comes down, the old-fashioned ones will come down and they'd have a lip. It's this area where it does the lip. Not the upper area, not the slanted area. Just the edge, we call it fascia. And then these are typical sizes for under awning and then blade. Next. These are your general service commercial. These are your awning. This is where you would be into the kind of the outlet malls and so on along the roadways. This is a typical multi-tenant of its heights, usually 24 feet. These are the directories and the artwork again. And then these are the changing message signs, gas and movie. So typical sizes and typical heights. And percents changeable.
Tom?
Bill?
Question. On these sizes, just so I understand it, you say they're typical, but is there a minimum, maximum size for these things?
When we're done with this, we'll put up a graphic that shows you what some of the sizes are. No, it varies city to city. Older ordinances tend to be much larger because the signs were not electronic, they were not high design, you might call it. The newer ordinances tend to be smaller surfaces, lower in height, more pedestal and monument.
So these heights that you're giving here, for example, these would be a maximum, or these are typical?
Oh, I would say typical.
But also maximum.
Well, that's the maximum height, but why 24 or 8?
That's a tip, the 8 and 24 are typical.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks.
They're not the these are not the smallest or not the lowest. If you go into any new office development or any new commercial development, some of these may be even more pedestrian oriented than what these show. But these are also not highway city. So typical is the best word.
Okay.
Next. These are the industrials. These are the only ones I filled in, the monument sign and the sizes for the tenants. Wall signs. Next. These are the limited duration signs. Can you scroll down?
Yeah, I'll get it.
And you see, well, I've filled in a typical again for commercial, filled in the banner signs typical, and I filled in the freestanding directionals for the subdivisions. Next. Political key issue. This I filled in the special events. And usually, this sometimes this gets to be an issue because you know that there are some retailers that are constantly having sales, and they use that as an excuse to have big banners and to fill up a lot of temporary signs to fill their face. And the issue is usually in your limited duration or in the duration table that I provided elsewhere is to manage how often they can do some of these things. So it doesn't become a going out of business sale on a perpetual basis where basically they've worked their way around your code. The other is a special event, and that's to get a little more, and this is also typical, a little more definition about what the rules are about special events. So that if the church is doing an event, it's really not much more different than what a retailer is doing. And a lot of times the issue here is to make the city subject to the same standards as you're applying to everybody else.
I got one more question. Would the guy standing out in the corner flipping a sign, would that show up on here somewhere?
No.
Should it?
I don't know. That's a question for you. Usually our biggest violators is the guys that paint their cars up and move their cars around and they become, you know, signs. And usually we have pretty good language for that. But the guy that stands out there with the Statue of Liberty thing on the tax museum in every city, most ordinances haven't had language to govern that.
Dave?
And I think as the audience, remember the audience just said, that's been a constitutional issue, that is freedom of speech, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on what it is. Up on my neighborhood in Anacortes, the main drag, you're going to the ferry terminal. For years, there used to be one political group on one corner and another political group on another corner, and they'd have signs, and basically they were yelling at each other as you drove through. That's political speech because they have a political message. But when a guy dresses up as a Statue of Liberty saying, come do your taxes over here, that's advertising.
That's advertising.
But I haven't seen any ordinances try to manage that particular aspect. Because what's he going to come in and get a permit?
We could do a little bit of research on that and bring back some examples from, you know, pick some cities and see what they do.
Did the city of Redmond had an issue with that, if I remember right?
I don't know. Frankly, I don't know.
You think they did?
I think
you can't win in court on that.
There is some, I believe, case law out there on that type of signage and the ability or inability, perhaps, of a city to regulate it.
So, you're not banning it. Whole essence of the ordinance is you're not banning it, you're regulating it. But there's a difference between political activity like an Anacortes versus the guy hawking tax credit. Tax
or mattresses.
Right.
Or when the sign holders aren't anywhere near their store. They're on Highway 2 and their store's on Main Street. There has to be something.
Which becomes maybe an odd habit sign.
Yep.
Yep. Mark, have citizens come in with any particular complaints regarding signage on a regular basis? And if so, what? And if so, then is it addressed in this?
I think the most common complaint type that we hear are sandwich or A-board signs. Probably 5 to 1. You know, for whatever reason, our regulations, sign of the times, whatever it is, and we all know those A-board signs have just proliferated everywhere, and people have, you know, our code says that they have to be on site, and we see them, you know, a mile away from their site. So that's the most common one.
So on the part of people who are coming in to get signed permits, are there consistent objections or the particular characteristics in the code that they say, you know, that's just not a big enough sign, or I need it closer to the building, or I need it farther away from the building, that sort of thing? When someone comes in, you hand them a permit sheet, do they just scream bloody murder because you're not going to let them do what they think they should be able to do?
No, I think most people are pretty understanding of the code. If they've gone so far as to come in and ask for a permit, they're of a mind that they understand that there are regulations out there and that they do follow them. And their first question is, I own this property at 2001 Main Street. What can I do for signs there? So I think most people that come in are pretty reasonable about complying with the signs. Where we run into trouble is the A-boards, the banners, the kind of temporary stuff that people just run out and put up. And
so how often do you do anything about it?
Well, we do it when we can. Rarely, actually, does the planning department take it on themselves to go out and pick up signs. I've been known to write some letters before. If I get a citizen come into the front desk, or if I get a letter at my desk that says this and this business, you know, has a whole slew of signs that are illegal, I often will write a letter. We do have LaDonna Whalen over at the police department. She does a certain amount of that, writing letters, and then she will actually go out and physically put signs in the back of her patrol car or bring them down here. And then, in our code, we have a fine. If you want to pick your sign up and take it home, it's generally a $25 fine just to get your sign back. So, but we, you know,
but it has to be provably illegal for this.
Sure. Yeah. It's not very hard most of the time to prove. And I guess, you know, one small advertisement in favor of staff is if we could somehow wrangle a halftime person or something just to do sign enforcement, we could get a lot more done than. Right now, we honestly really don't have anybody assigned to do sign enforcement. We're just plenty busy with everything else we have to do.
A couple other comments. I think Mark is absolutely right on the A-boards and banners being the most troublesome signs in terms of complaints and complaints and so forth. We also, on occasion, get requests for illegal placement of off premises signs. That's mostly been happening with banners in the past. We've done some enforcement on that on occasion. So that can be a problem. And enforcement wise, as Mark said, yeah, we have very limited resources to do enforcement. We respond to complaints. We rarely are proactive about enforcing signage. And part of the problem is if we begin enforcing signage in one area, we have to then carry on and institute that throughout the entire city so we don't play favorites. And part of the intent here is that when this sign code is put together and we have clear regulations, we will not only be able to more effectively regulate new signs, but we are going to find a way to do enforcement and start bringing things into compliance. It may take some time, but that's part of the intent of this sign code update. Not just the content, but the enforcement as well.
Thank you. I will say, Jeff, regarding your first question about complaints, as somebody who does design on commercial buildings, we do complain a lot about the signage, but just not to the city, because we know it'll go nowhere. But in the office, when we're looking at the square footage we're allowed and how many surfaces we can have it on, we and our client, we do a lot of complaining about, man, this is so small, how is anybody going to be able to read this? Of course, everybody wants a bigger sign, but yeah, there's a lot of complaints on our end, but we know there's no city wants to go through the signage code over and over again, and so you just don't complain to the city. Dave?
As a professional, do you have many communities that you don't complain about?
You know, Redmond's not back. I can tell you the ones we do complain about. Issaquah is one that's very frustrating. It goes back to that rectangle. They, if you have an odd-shaped sign, their ordinance is the outermost edges is what you create your rectangle with. So when we have an unusual shape, it gets very small because we can't average it out. And so if you got one piece sticking out, that thing gets real small on the square footage. So I would say Issaquah is one of them.
I could say Missoula has a very similar rule. You take whatever they have, logo or advertising, and you draw a rectangle around it, and whatever. I mean, it doesn't. It's all got to fit inside that rectangle. Then you measure the rectangle, and that's the size of the square footage you get. Similar, or maybe exactly the same as what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So my point in all of this is, if it helps our businesses without blighting our community, we should maybe push for larger signages here where it is reasonable, just to help. So
yeah.
I guess
I don't think size is. Let's look at some examples and show you. And I think one of the other issues is one of the key elements we put in ordinances as an attachment is the design manual, showing good signage, what we think is contemporary, state-of-the-art. And it's not the size, per se, that has the greatest impact. I think Best Buy is an example. Home Depot is another example. Their signs are not big, but they've woven them into a whole building motif, and the building is their sign indirectly. And they're much more effective than just making it big. One of the worst offenders, on the other hand, is Joann's. Nothing but words across the whole face of the building. When, you know, even if you just try to take the words and add them all up, they're much bigger than Best Buy, but they're relatively ineffective. And they're not ineffective just from the understanding what the advertising is, but they're ineffective because they really don't have any punch to them, no panache. But put up, let me show you some size.
And frankly, part of the problem we have is that we do not regulate the content of the sign. The language, the words, there's a law about logos, but there are many signs that are so poorly designed and overworded that they're totally ineffective. Where they use 15 words and they can do the same with two or three words. It's like a good PowerPoint slide. It's not filled with 100 words.
Go to the top one. Size examples building two.
Authority.
Very top.
Yeah, I would say, if I could, real quick on restaurants. We designed our client had a sign designed in Redmond, Coho Cafe, and Redmond sign ordinance worked perfect for them. So that's what they designed it to. And then when they decided to put a second store in Issaquah, in order to make it legible, they would have to redesign their whole sign and then change their look. So that's, I guess it's kind of inherent in certain situations.
Is that what you run into when you've got, I'm surmising you're Redmond with a regulatory-based sign ordinance, per se, nuts and bolts, feet and dimensions, versus Issaquah that incorporates an aesthetic greater aesthetic element to the signage.
Well, I don't recall what it was. It's almost 15 years ago that we did the Redmond Cove, but the sign that was designed for that store was the perfect size, knowing what we were dealing with. And when it came to Issaquah, there was a new rule where we had to, versus Redmond, where we had to go from the outside of this sign facing the road. And by the time it was done, the text in that sign, again, poorly designed for Issaquah, really, but would have to be redesigned. Because the rules had changed, it had to shrink significantly. So
then if we're going to incorporate a design manual, how are we deciding what's a good sign versus a bad sign? The sign could be 12 square feet, and we could have seven different opinions here as to whether it's a good sign or a bad sign.
The ordinance specifies the dimensions.
Right.
The guidelines, not a manual. Guidelines. These are examples of what we think are state-of-the-art. Take them or leave them. No, you're not doing design review of the contents. And don't, because that's just impossible. Because when I show you, well, probably before we get into the substantive, we'll run through the manual or the guidelines so you can get a flavor for what it really makes an impact. And that, I think, will start to tell you some things about the dimensional issues. For every rule there is, there's somebody's taken that and made it a great sign. We used to dislike pan signs, and I'll show you some really dynamite pan signs. We used to not like to have emblems, and I'll show you stuff that's great emblems. And we used to not want neon in business districts, and I'll show you stuff from the business districts that's great for neon. So the purpose of the design guidelines is just to say, if this is a state of the art, when they come in and you give them a whole bunch of dimensions, that's great, but you also want to say, you know, this is what we think it should be. Take it or leave it. The only thing we can really administer is the dimensions. But as I say, you'll see the dimensions don't have to be big to be effective. And there are no absolute rules in the design sense about how to create a great sign. You agree?
I would agree, yeah.
But if you don't put those visual examples up, everybody will get all into the math. And I think that's a mistake. Well, let me show you just a couple of things to show you what size is. So let's presume this is a really historic building, and you only have a couple of these in your downtown district that would fit this particular dimension. But if there were four different tenants here and they each would be allowed to have a wall sign component, this is 20, 40, 40, 40, and that fills on this particular building the area that it can actually mount a sign on. Your current downtown ordinance allows up to 100 square feet. So you see 40 fills that space. It all depends on the building. Then if you were to have, quote, a big banner all the way across the top, this is the maximum amount you could fill in that. That's 240 square feet. But you can see it's a multi-tenant building. If this were a department store, that's probably the only sign they'd have up there. But if this is a multi-tenant building, they're going to have, like you have in your downtown, I forgot what the name of the building is, just the name of the building in the state. Yeah. So then you don't need a very big element. Now this shows opaque and transparent. Opaque usually happens down on the bottom. That's the operating hours, the credit cards, and so on. The transparent stuff is usually what sits up here in the eye and what they want you to see through. They get across their low element or something else. And you can see that's 40%. That still leaves lots of glass. These are directories, multi-tenant directories. Those are 25 square feet. Those are big. That's the list of all the tenants in that building. And these are typical, these are what we call the fascia awnings, and that's usually 40%. So that awning really runs from this edge to this edge, and you see that's a lot. That's the name of the store or whatever they want to get across. You don't really need to run it all the way across the lake. One thing you don't have in your downtown are projecting signs in your ordinance. You allow them out in your general commercial, but not in your downtown. And frankly, the downtowns have tons of projecting signs when they were developed.
This is 60 square feet, that's 75 square feet. These don't have to be very big to be dominant.
Then we do allow blade signs, though, is that correct?
But blades are the, instead of the, it all depends on how you define blade. Usually blade is what sticks out underneath the awning.
Right.
As opposed to this, which is a projecting sign.
Right.
Go to the next page. This is a contemporary building. This is Gold's Gym. This is in the Tri-Cities area, but this is their franchise store. Now, they put their big emblem up here. Unfortunately, I used a square to measure it. That's 72 square feet, and then they have Gold's Gym across here. That's 120 square feet. Then they have this little kind of nondescript little sign that says aerobics. That's 12 square feet. You add all those up, and that's what, 204 square feet.
Dave?
All of that. For all that building face, those are all wall signs, that's 204 square feet. I think your current quote allows 300 square feet. But you can see the most effective thing there is the emblem of Gold's Gym. But you can see how they designed the entrance, how they color-coded the paint, and how that pops. Now, if those were black letters on all white building, wouldn't have as much impact as mixing color into the sign, mixing color into the building. The biggest proponent of this is Panda Express. If you've seen a Panda Express, you know, it's a little fast food outlet, the whole building is colorful, and if you get down, the only sign on it is Panda Express, and it's very small. So again, it all comes down to what your eye perceives. So it sounds like we should go through the manual the very next time before we get into the substance, and that gives you some background for the substance. That help?
Dave?
I think this probably is more for Mark and Tom, too, because it goes to the tables. We're missing two zones in the proposed tables.
Which ones are those?
The mixed-use zones along Main Street. And as a matter of fact, I was looking at the zoning map online here just to remind me of what they were called, and they don't show on the zoning map. It's out of date.
Not under your downtown?
The mixed-use neighborhood commercial and mixed-use commercial.
They're not under official rules.
Well, I think this is from 2010.
Oh, okay.
So, just that was up there.
That was before it was adopted.
Right.
So your sign or your current ordinance doesn't address those two zones. Is that right?
Not individually,
right?
But in that, when we did the Main Street, we had signs within that.
There's a
second. I don't remember.
Yeah, we did.
I know we do when we did downtown commercial. Okay.
So we did signs.
Yeah, there is a.
Spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
Well, we did. There are sign regulations for the mixed-use zones in our
In the sign code, there's a section, 1880.095.
Hold on, that's not in here, though.
No. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No.
That's not in here.
I don't have a strike.
Well, we may have corrected Tom to an older code. When did the MUC go into?
Yeah, I don't have an 095 in my.
When did MUC go into life?
That was 2011. Late fall of 2011.
Yeah, so it's probably just a version issue, and we got Tom the wrong version. Not his fault. Probably ours.
I want you to write that down.
That's I think I heard it.
I don't mind. Again, these are the kind of reasons why we're here tonight.
Yeah.
We've got to clear this stuff up.
What was that on the NMC? What was the reference on that?
It's 8. I got it. 1880.80. Point 095.
Thank you.
But Tom, I think we need to give you a current version of the code.
Yeah. That probably is where we're going to start picking up what I consider some of the usual stuff in the downtown, projecting signs and so on. Okay.
One other question. The Al Borland neighborhood, is that just the downtown commercial zone for signage? Or does it have different signage from downtown commercial? I don't remember.
I don't recall.
That's not the rails and roads. There's the Al Borland, which is over toward the park.
Well, here it says downtown commercial, except rails and roads. So.
Right, and then under general commercial, it includes rails and roads. So.
But my point is, I think that the Al Borland neighborhood has different sign standards than the downtown commercial zone.
It may be in the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood downtown.
Which has different signage from.
Yeah. But I think if we want to try to help staff's job here, we want to correct all the signage.
Yeah, you want them all in one ordinance. This includes the Kelsey, North Kelsey, and this includes your downtown plan.
And the North Kelsey's been changed.
I'm sorry?
North Kelsey's been changed.
Well, whatever the signage dimensions in the North Kelsey are in this draft, and the dimensions that were in the downtown plan are in this draft. Both of those plans also had a lot of aesthetic discussions. I only transferred the dimensional issues because I consider the guidelines will get pick up the aesthetic issues. But yeah, if you have a neighborhood plan that has other standards, we'll want to consolidate.
It'd be the downtown master plan that's going to be where you're going to find that. If there is a difference, I don't know off the top of my head, but I didn't bring the downtown plan with me tonight.
There is a difference. Downtown commercial, Al Borland, rails and roads, those are three different areas when it comes to signage with different regulations.
But the thing I got to remember there is those are guidelines. And they're.
Well, maybe could you just take a look and see?
Oh, I will definitely take a look at
it. Okay. Yeah, when I went through your downtown plan, I didn't find very many dimensions. I found lots of discussions about how under-awning signs should be done, how sandwiches should be done, on the motif or the styles and so on. And I put all that into your guidelines. Because you don't want that language in the ordinance. It's unenforceable and pretty much unusable. But in your guidelines, when you use it, use graphics to show what you're trying to achieve.
And so, just forgive me, you were going to go over the guidelines at our next
I think meeting. You should see those first.
Because and then that, go into the...
That helps temper the ordinance. And what I find is seeing that then allows you to... You'll find you can get by with a lot less dimensional, a lot less trying to make the ordinance a aesthetic document. Let your guidelines do that. There's about 40 pages in the guidelines. One for almost every kind of sign. Downtown as well as contemporary stuff.
Great.
So yeah, if it's okay, we'll flash through that first and then we'll go into the substance questions. And I've got, this is still kind of style, if you want to put it like that. Substance is getting into cleaning up some of the language just how it's done, and then you're debating some of the sciences and other issues.
Great. I do have a question for staff. I know that there was a point where some of the members of the business community were involved in this. Are they still being referenced at times? Are they keeping up to speed with what's happening and being consulted, I guess you could say, at times in this process?
I think the answer to that is no, not at the moment. We're waiting to get to a point where we have public hearings and are more at a place where we can invite them in and show them something, some direction we're going. And it's not that we're being secretive about it,
right,
but we're not advertising it like we would a public hearing.
Right, and anybody can come to a workshop, and I just remember that at one point there was kind of a group that had
Yeah,
and then it was like the timing.
I mean, they're still available, but they and we agreed, you know, together that that it wasn't the time for them to be meeting right now, that we needed to be bringing this to you guys at this point, and then at some point we may bring them back on board.
The main objective of that ad hoc committee was really to define, to look at the existing code and define the most apparent issues of what we should be dealing with. So we just really translated into that list on the cover sheet. And we'll have to do some back checking to see how we have or have not addressed those items specifically. But that was really their main charge, was what's wrong with this code? And then we've gone on to try and fix it.
Right. Great.
And we'll close that circle at some point with the ad hoc group. But.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. I was just curious where that was. I know we asked every single business owner in the city, we get a ton of different answers. So I was curious where that's at.
I wanted to add on to the answer to Mr. Sherwood's earlier question about what's the most contentious. And I think if I were to go wherever we are, say third or fourth spot, it would be electronic, anything electronic, speaker boards, even to the point of neon, but more the electronic and video type signs. That's where we get the most friction, I suppose. Business owners really want to see that kind of stuff, and we just don't have it in our regs to really accommodate it.
Dave?
And there was a reason for that. It was the desire at the time.
Sure. And it may still be the desire. I'm not saying, I'm not pushing it one way or the other. I'm just answering his question of, you know, things that we hear about. It's A boards, banners, off-premises signs. What else did we say? There's one.
Electronic signs.
And then, the next thing that we hear the most about, the most grating comment coming towards us is electronic signs.
I would guess from both sides of the...
Both sides, absolutely.
Don't we have a lighting ordinance that... Does a lighting ordinance ever come into some of the complaints with the signage, or...
Lighting in what sense?
We have a lighting ordinance in City of Monroe. It's been a few years since we worked on it, but there's all sorts of regulations about lights shining in other properties.
And they have to be shielded and hooded and so on.
Yeah.
And I think some of those signs are pretty bright. I think people have complained about that. But.
In your sign ordinance, you do have some lumens standards and so on. But frankly, what we'll propose is to import the most current industry standards. And usually they have a daytime, nighttime. So they crank them down at night because you don't need to be as bright, and because it's less of a irritant. Now, almost all ordinances will usually say that sign light has to be directed in either to the public thoroughfare or into the site.
Commissioner, Jeff?
We need either sign off or extend.
Oh, right. Well, I would entertain a motion to extend the meeting past 9 o'clock, I guess.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Motion was made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood, I guess. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Commissioners, any other comments or questions at this point? So it looks like we're going to be coming back for some more on this.
We'll be back.
For some more details. Yeah. Commissioners, any problem pointed at? Anybody in the audience wanted to make any comments, objections to that? I would. Before I do, I'll just remind the audience that if you could just address the Planning Commission instead of staff and consultants, it makes it a little easier for us. Vicki, did you? I see your hand there.
Well, just some of the comments you'd asked about. The downtown one does, you'd asked, said about not taking projecting signs, and it said there were, but there are. They're in under 18-80120, it's under projecting. And there's quite a number of the gray shaded areas that may be different because I as you might not know, was very instrumental in doing this one, or being around when this one was done. And I think that there's some definite, the way that it was written, I think Ben and Kate wrote it, and when they wrote it, a lot of times when it says permitted kind of thing, I think that there's been some mistake with when you are looking at it, that it actually meant you needed a permit. I think that the whole section that says like garage sales and all those, that whole yes thing, I think those were all no's. So I think that there's a lot of things in here because it'll say we're permitted, but it doesn't mean you need a permit. And so,
can you get us a markup for that? Get it to Mark, and then we can use that.
Yeah, I think there's a great, and I think Dave, you're probably familiar with it, maybe as well, or maybe some other people on the planning might be familiar with it, where there's things that, knowing the people that wrote it and the reason it was written, the behind the scenes of it, makes it make a lot more sense. There were specific things that, specific buildings, specific incidents that were written, and that's why it was written in the way it was.
Okay.
So, the old tapes on it, or the old minutes on it even, I know even exactly which buildings they were written for. So, it was very specific.
Okay.
Which is my
opinion. But can you mark up a copy of this?
Sure.
Yep. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. So I guess with that, our workshop is done, and we'll move on to comments from commissioners and staff. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul, anything?
Just worried about our next meeting on December 10th. We're now scheduled for a continuation of the Roosevelt Road rezoning, and we'll have Tom back for signs on the 10th.
Yeah. That's and, what day of the week is that?
Monday.
We have a couple of other possible items that could go potentially on that agenda. We don't want to get it too crowded. But there is no second meeting in December. That's December 24th. I don't think anyone's going to be here. So that would push us into January. A couple of things I'm thinking about are the 2013 work program and an update on cannabis. And I may be able to give you an informational quick update on cannabis on the 10th.
Okay. Would that be with regard to growing or
to
selling?
Well, in regard to collective gardens, which are actually a totally separate subject than the legalization, retail sales, which is, I think, going to be controlled by the liquor board. It may be controlled just like liquor, which would take it out of our hands and into the hands of the state. The collective gardens are still with us, and we need to be dealt with.
As you know, we've had a moratorium on collective gardens for, I think, exactly a year now.
1 year. On December 6th.
It runs in 6 months intervals, and we have recently run out of 6 months, so we need to extend our moratorium. So that's the one issue that Paul was talking about. And then I don't know if he's planning on, I'm kind of looking at you, Paul, having information on the legislative topic as well.
Actually, we are getting some direction from our city attorney's office maybe next week on just what all this means. So he'll help clarify.
Great. Thank you. Mark, anything else?
No, I appreciate you guys a lot. It's good to get here and sort of bring this before you. I appreciate Tom's good work, but it's great to have you guys really listening in, asking good questions, and making good comments. So, thanks.
I hope you feel that way in 3 months, Mark.
No, you guys are awesome. I've worked other places. You guys are great.
Bridget, anything?
No.
Wayne?
No.
Dan?
No.
Bill?
Nothing.
Jeff?
No.
Dave?
Nothing.
I have nothing either. So I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Christensen, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Should I get out of it?
On the regulations for South Bend, how would you close that in? If you're going